The classic rhetorical question is, the Pope Catholic has been turned on its head under the pontificate of Francis. Now Catholics are seriously asking, is the Pope a heretic? That's what we're going to discuss on today's Crisis Point. Hello, I'm Eric Sammons, your host and editor-in-chief of Crisis Magazine. I have a feeling this might be a longer one, so I'm just going to jump right into it. I have a lot of thoughts on this matter. This is a very confusing matter. It's not as clear cut as some people might want to think it is, and so I'm going to try to break down what I think are the important points for us to consider when we're talking about whether or not the Pope, this Pope particularly, or any Pope, is a heretic or not. Now, Pope Francis, since he was elected in 2013, has been accused of being, let's just say, not always on a good relationship with Orthodoxy. I think from the beginning of his pontificate, people have been accusing him of heresy or at least having heretical tendencies. Now, to be fair, this is also true of other popes in the past, even in our recent past, modern times. Pope Benedict, probably not as much, but definitely John Paul II, a lot of accusations against him. I detail some criticisms of him in my book, Deadly Indifference, John Paul II, some of his issues he had talking about other religions and things of that nature. But it's obvious in modern times that it's Pope Francis that a lot of Catholics have started to believe that he could potentially be a heretic, or he is a heretic, some people would say. And the chorus has been rising over the years of his 8 years, almost nine years now, sitting on the seat of St. Peter. It really began in earnest when he issued Amoris Laetitia, I think that was in 2016, because that was clearly went against the previous magisterial teaching that those who are divorced and remarried may not receive communion. Now, of course, there was some excuses made for it. There's some ambiguities. It was a footnote and things like that. Then there was his, when he supported the interpretation of the Argentinian bishops, and, you know, a lot of confusion there, but clearly most people took that apostolic letter to say that the Pope thought it was okay for divorced and remarried people to receive communion, which is obviously contrary to scripture, tradition, even the explicit teachings of John Paul II. In 2017, a filial correction was issued by a lot of people, signed by a lot of people that asserted that Francis upheld heretical positions. Again, in most of these cases, people aren't accusing him of being a heretic, but instead just allowing heresy to flourish. And then in 2019, a letter was sent to him accusing him of a canonical delict of heresy, basically meaning that he is, again, supporting heresy, allowing heresy to flourish in his own statements supporting heresy. Now, this has been a topic of conversation and debate for years now, but it's coming up again because last week on Candlemas, on the Feast of the Presentation, the Pope said this. He said, "Let us think about those who have denied the faith, who are apostates, who are the persecutors of the church, who have denied their baptism. Are these also at home? Yes, these too, even the blasphemers, everyone. We are brothers. This is the communion of the saints. The communion of saints holds together the community of believers on earth and in heaven." So he explicitly says that blasphemers, those who are persecutors of the church, apostates, that they are part of the communion of saints. This is just simply wrong. The communion of saints has always been believed. It is those baptized members of the church, either in heaven or in purgatory here on earth, who are faithful members of the church. Apostates, people who have denied their baptism, who have rejected the faith, they are not part of the communion of saints. And there's no way we can try and claim they are. And so this language, which is very typical for Francis, is muddled at best. To give it the best possible interpretation, it just really is just muddled. And it's wrong. I mean, I'm not going to try Pope explain it and act like it's actually correct what he said. It's wrong. But it's very typical. Now, this is just one incident. It's not like this is the one time where you could just say, well, it was misspoke, maybe misunderstood, something like that. This is often that Francis speaks in a way and says things that a plain reading of them clearly contradicts Catholic teaching. Now, a lot of people over time, over that time, have done a lot of Pope-splaining. That's my term, by the way, for people who try to act like what the Pope said isn't really what he said, or it means something completely different from what it sounds like he means. Now, I do want to be fair. There have been times I have seen people criticize the Pope for something and say it's heretical. And it really, I think it's easy to read it as not being heretical. I think we don't have to go and find the worst possible interpretation for everything he says in order to paint him in a bad light. I do think there are times when he says things that just maybe weren't well stated, but they aren't heretical either. So I think some of the Pope's splaining, for example, is fine as far as it goes. I think we should give benefit of doubt to the Pope and try to understand it in a way that is in keeping with Catholic tradition. But I just think there's too many instances of clear statements like this that clearly contradict Catholic teaching. This isn't a one-off. This is a pattern in which the Francis says things that go against Catholic teaching, and it just takes too much of a stretch of reason to try to act like they don't contradict what the church has taught before. I think we do have to. Giving benefit of doubt does not mean we completely lose our faculties of reason. We still have to use our brains, our intellects, and decide what is the actual meaning. And if he doesn't clarify it later, remember that we've had dubia, we've had things of where he could clarify it, and either he doesn't clarify it or he clarifies it in a way that doubles down on the error. So I think we're not being hypercritical or trying to find everything wrong when we say he's definitely said things during his pontificate that are contrary to reason, contrary to the faith. So I want to take a step back before I go into details of what I think this means, because this is obviously a big deal. If you're a Roman Catholic, the Pope saying things that are clearly contrary to Catholic teaching, that's an issue. That's a big problem. And it's not something you can just wipe under the rug and act like it's not happening. So let's take a step back before we get into that, though, and let's be clear about some of our terms and what we mean here. What does it mean to say somebody is a heretic? If somebody is a heretic, first of all, I want to make sure it's clear. It's not somebody who's in schism. It's also not somebody who's an apostate. Those are different sins. An apostate is somebody who rejects the totality of the faith. They just say, okay, they were at one point Catholic, and now they're saying that there's nothing. They reject that. They're not Catholic anymore. They don't want to be Catholic anymore, and they reject it wholesale. That's an apostate. Somebody in schism would be somebody who does accept the teachings of the church, but are in schism with the proper hierarchy of that church. And so that would be somebody who is in schism. A heretic is somebody who, first of all, they have to be a Catholic, really, technically, to be a heretic. Because it's somebody who rejects one aspect, or maybe more than one aspect, of the faith, and they believe something contrary to something that the church teaches definitively, not just speculation, but definitively. So, for example, if somebody is a Catholic but they believe that the Eucharist is not the body, blood, soul, and divinity of our Lord Jesus Christ, then that's heresy to believe that. Now, here's the thing. You know, and I know lots of people who are Catholic, who believe they're good Catholics, who believe things that are contrary to the Catholic faith. They just don't realize it often. I mean, there was a study, the Pew study, I think it was a year or so ago, that said 70% of people who self-identify as Catholics do not believe that the Eucharist is just a symbol, which is obviously heresy. So you could say on one level, they are all heretics, and that would be true. Definitely they are heretics. You are a heretic if you think something that is heretical. You're a member of the church and you believe something heretical. However, we have to distinguish between material heresy and formal heresy. Material heresy is somebody who unknowingly holds to heresy. And so they don't realize they're heretic. If somebody explained to them, hey, this isn't what the church teaches, here's what teaches, and say, oh, okay, I'm sorry, that's what I believe then. I believe what the church teaches. Then they're not really truly a heretic. I know maybe on some technical material heretic, but they're not heretic in the sense that we really mean it typically, which is somebody who holds to something. This would be a formal heresy. They hold to something that is contrary to the church, definitive church teaching, and they know it's contrary to definitive church teaching, and so they still hold to it. That would be a formal heretic, somebody who's really that's somebody who is, I think, in all senses of the term, a heretic. I think in today's age of lots of confusion, a terrible catechesis, where lots of Catholics just, they grew up Catholic, but they never really were taught the faith. The vast majority of them believe heresy, but I have a hard time just saying, okay, you're a heretic in the sense that someone who's a formal heretic, I'd say that about. I think this is important to remember this because these terms do mean things. If you are a formal heretic, you know the church teaches something and you reject it. Your salvation, therefore, is in jeopardy. Your membership in the church, you're no longer a member of the Catholic Church. You've exited from the Catholic Church. Yes, is baptism, you still have a connection to the Catholic Church, but you've exited from membership in the Catholic Church by rejecting knowingly something the church teaches. Whereas a material heretic, somebody who doesn't believe something that's incorrect but doesn't really realize it, it's bad. I don't want to act like it's not a good thing, because it can lead them to all types of problems, leads them outside the church, things like that. But it's not necessarily puts their salvation in jeopardy, because even, Pope Pius the Ninth in the 19th century made very clear that invincible ignorance is not cannot prevent somebody from necessarily being saved. Now, obviously, we could have whole debates about what invincible ignorance is, whether or not that's possible today with today's internet and all that stuff. I'm not going to get into that. I just want to talk more about heresy in general here. Now, I find it hard to believe that Pope Francis doesn't know that some of his views contradict previous church teaching. I'm not saying it's impossible, but I find it very hard to believe. I mean, formation catechesis is so bad, even among priests and bishops, trust me, bishops do not know today Catholic teaching as well as people assume they know it. I can just tell you this for a fact, that they are at times, they just are wrong. I mean, they don't realize that they're wrong. They're just wrong about some fundamental things about Catholic teaching. But we do know that Francis has said things that are contrary to church teaching. And so what I would say is, I find it very hard to believe. It just stretches reason to a breaking point to think he doesn't know that he's contradicting church teaching. However, I'd also say that a lot of modernists, a lot of people today in the church today, they think it's okay to contradict previous church teaching and still be a Catholic good standing. They actually think church teaching evolves and changes such that you can believe something now that they didn't believe before, and that's okay. So where do we go with that? That's another crazy scenario. I'm not even going to get into that right now. I can't judge his or anybody's inner beliefs. That's actually what Christ is talking about when he says, you know, you shall not judge. You're not trying to judge their inner soul. What you can judge, though, is their actions and their words. And it's very easy to say, by the words of Pope Francis, he says things that are contrary to church teaching, that are heresy. And therefore, can we say that in his internal soul, he's a heretic? I don't know. I just know that he says things that are heretical. So what does this mean for our theology of the papacy? That's what really matters here, because if we're just talking about Joe Blow down the street, who cares? I mean, it cares for Joe Blow because he could go to hell, but who cares for the ecclesiology and the theology of the papacy in the church, what he may or may not say, whether or not it's consistent with church teaching or not. But when the Pope does it, that's a big deal, like I said before. So can the Pope be a heretic? This is something that's actually been debated for quite some time, for about 1,000 years now, about whether or not the Pope can be debated. And what's interesting is that the debate really has coincided with the development of the church's teaching on papal infallibility. Because in the first millennium of Christian history, there was a lot of debate about what does it mean that the Pope's infallible? And it's more just a matter of the Church of Rome was faithful. The Church of Rome always maintained the teachings of the Church. The Church of Rome is who we look to, things like that. But the personal papal infallibility was not something that was really debated and discussed as much until later. In fact, a lot of people, many people probably in the first millennium, they would see the Church of Rome as definitely being faithful, being infallible even. But they wouldn't necessarily say each individual pope and everything he says, or even a lot of things he says, would be infallible, that you couldn't have a pope who's a heretic. But this became a big deal when the development on the teaching on infallibility, papal infallibility, really came to the fore in the Middle Ages, particularly 12th century, 13th century, 14th century. Then the discussion of, okay, can a pope be a heretic? And if a pope is a heretic, what does that mean? That really started to come to the fore. But honestly, a lot of it was theoretical. It wasn't necessarily a matter of, okay, our pope right now is problematic, so let's talk about it. It was more like, let's just say, what would happen if? And I honestly believe that when you talk about in theory, that's not the same as living through it. I think there's a big difference between the two, because when you live through it, what happens is you fine-tune your arguments, you focus them a lot more because you see it happening in real time. Whereas when it's theoretical, you can't really live through it and know, okay, what does it mean? Like, how would he be heretical? Would he say this or could he say this? I mean, if God up and denied the Trinity explicitly, say, I do not believe that God is three persons, that's one thing. And in theory, you could talk about what that means. But then when he does the things that, for example, Pope Francis is actually doing, then the discussion, the debate, I think it changes. It becomes a lot more focused. And I think I don't want to say it's good for the church, because of course it's not good for the church in the sense of you don't want a pope saying things that is contrary to church teaching. At the same time, if it helps the church to develop its understanding of the papacy, if it helps the church to understand what it means, papal infallibility and things like that, then I do think it can be used for good, because God can use anything for good. So can a pope be a heretic, which of course is what I titled this episode? Some would say, no, it's impossible, that you simply could not have a pope who is a heretic. The Holy Spirit will protect them from that happening. And they really, in today's world, that fall, and actually always, that falls into two camps of people, two extremes. Because some people would say that would then be very clear that Pope Francis is never said anything that's heretical, because a pope can't say something heretical. On the other hand, on the other extreme, you have people say Pope Francis is definitely not the pope. He's not Pope Francis. He's Jorge Bergoglio, and he's an anti-pope. And that's definite. And I know that for sure. So those are really, and both of them are coming at it from the same assumption, which is that the pope can't be a heretic. And so other people would say that the pope could personally be a heretic, that he could believe it in his own maybe heretical things in his heart, but he wouldn't teach them publicly. Others would say that, but he wouldn't teach them definitively. So he could even teach things publicly that were heretical, but not definitively, i.e. infallibly defined for the whole church to believe. And so there really has been debate on that. Now, I would say that it's hard to say you couldn't have a holder of the papal office. Okay, here, let me try to word this as precisely as possible. Somebody whom many people believe to be the pope, I wouldn't say you, from history, you could say that person couldn't have heretical beliefs. I find it hard to believe after 266, I think, popes, that none of them held heretical beliefs. In fact, I think it's pretty clear that a few of them definitely did. And some of these guys who were appointed, you know, they're in the pornocracy of the 10th century. Are you really telling me they were completely orthodox in their beliefs? Timothy Flanders at 1 Peter 5 wrote a nice article about this, about the third pornocracy, I think he called it, where he gave some examples where people were complaining that, for example, a pope and his audiences would say things that are contrary to the faith. So I think it's impossible, in my mind, it's not really plausible, at least, to say that no pope has ever held heretical beliefs, at least, and even taught them at some level. And so if the pope is doing this, what happens? And this is a debate that also has been going on and has been very heated for a long time. Now, it cooled down when we had great popes, but it heats back up when we have some that aren't so great. Some would say that he automatically loses his office. This is a belief held by many and taught by many. They automatically lose his office. One thing is interesting. I've been reading recently the history in the 14th century, some debates about with the Franciscans and the popes and the church about the teaching of evangelical poverty and other things. What's interesting is that there was Pope Nicholas, I can't remember which one, fifth or something like that, in the late 13th century. He wrote in a bull, papal bull, declared that evangelical poverty was the way that the apostles and Christ live. They own nothing. And then Pope John the 22nd in the early 14th century said, no, that's not the case. And the some of the more radical Franciscans basically then said that John the 22nd was an anti-pope. He wasn't, because of his heresy, he wasn't a legitimate pope. William of Ockham is probably the most famous of those who held to this. And in fact, William of Ockham also said that John the 22nd was not the pope because he also taught heresy when it came to beatific vision. What's interesting about this is a couple things. First of all, when it comes to teaching evangelical poverty, the church has basically sided with John the 22nd. But when it comes to the beatific vision, they sided against John the 22nd. Now, also one thing to note is that the teaching on the beatific vision was not yet definitively defined at the time of John the 22nd. It was actually defined after his death. So you could argue that is it really heresy if the Pope hasn't definitively declared it? And I think that's a good argument. But William of Ockham, who disagreed with him, thought he was a heretic. And his argument is very clear. He believed in papal infallibility, but he said if a Pope does not agree with something in the past, that means he's a heretic, a papal teaching in the past. That means he's a heretic and he's no longer the Pope. So he was a Sedi Vacantist, essentially, in the 14th century. And he wasn't the only one. So there's a practical case of somebody not only saying theoretically, when a pope is a heretic, he loses his office. But he also basically said, this pope today. And actually, William of Ockham had a lot of issues. He thought most Catholics weren't really Catholic and were outside the church because they didn't basically believe what he believed. And so they were all heretics. And it was really actually a sad situation how he descended into a very subjective view of what it means to be Catholic. It basically is to agree with him. And that is the danger when you start saying the Pope's a heretic and he's not the Pope anymore. Now, one thing I want to note is there is a lot of, I mean, you'll see these quotes over and over again on Twitter, on social media. I think I already saw some in the comments, you know, Francis de Sales or John Henry Newman or somebody who's a quote from them saying a Pope who's a heretic is ipso facto not a Pope anymore. A couple things on that. Number one is, that doesn't make it definitive church teaching. It doesn't mean we should dismiss it either. But just because a bunch of Catholics, even Catholic saints have said something doesn't make it true. I also think in some cases, they're not taking the whole context of what the person thought. Because they're not just simply saying, when the Pope's a heretic, then he's no longer Catholic, I'm no longer the Pope, and I can say that. A number of them, when they say that, they're saying, if the church declares them a heretic, then they're no longer Catholic. And I think that's actually my second point that I was going to say is that others say that, yes, if a pope is a heretic, then he must be judged by a competent authority and then declared a heretic and therefore and no longer be pope and be deposed from office. Now, it's even more complicated than that. I mean, it's not that simple because the church has been very clear, particularly in the last millennium, that the Pope can be judged by no one. And so who's judging him a heretic if he can be judged by no one? Well, the way theologians have gotten around this is to say, well, if he's a heretic, then he's no longer Pope, so therefore people can judge him. A council, cardinals, whoever can judge him, and then basically say he's no longer and declare to the for the world to know he's no longer Pope. And there's a certain logic to that position, and I can see the reasoning behind it. Some very great minds have kind of said that, but I do think we've gotten a chicken and the egg problem here, because the Pope is judged by no one, so who can say that he's not the Pope? But if he's not the Pope, then people can say it, so he can be judged, and it gets a very confusing mess, to be honest, because someone is basically judging that the unjudgeable Pope isn't the Pope, so therefore he can be judged. But what if the people judging he's a heretic Pope, they're wrong, because they're not infallible after all. It's not like if it's the ecumenical council, then I think we could have an argument there that they would be infallible, their declaration. But if it's like maybe the College of Cardinals are not infallible. So if they declare that, we're not necessarily solving a problem here, because now we could just argue that a Catholic could legitimately argue the College of Cardinals is wrong in their judgment that the Pope is a heretic. So it's a real, like I said, this is a confusing mess. It really does. It's a real scandal. And I'm trying to be very clear that I'm not trying to minimize the scandal. And I'm not trying to give easy answers, because there are no easy answers. If anybody, you know, this is one of my frustrations. And I'll just come out and admit it. When I see on social media, people act like this is an open and shut case. It's an easy thing. they'll quote somebody like Francis de Sales or something like that to say, oh yeah, Bergoglio is not the Pope then. And I just think that's, it's not that simple. I don't think that's the way it works, because some people have also just, there have been many Catholics who've just thought, okay, if the Pope's a heretic, that is terrible and awful, but he doesn't automatically lose his office, because that's not the way it works, that he would keep his office even though he does have heretical beliefs. And I think that's another view. And I think that was probably the most common view in the first millennium of the church, was the fact that, yeah, a pope could be a heretic. It probably wouldn't happen, but that doesn't mean he automatically loses his office. So what's my take on all this? And I this is honestly, this is my opinion as of today. And I'm what is today? The February the 8th, 2022. And my views on this have evolved some and developed as I've thought about this more. And I've read a lot of books on this. I'm really been studying this issue of just the papacy in general and things like that over the years. And to be blunt, it's because Francis has led me to want to study it, the problems of his pontificate. Excuse me. And I just think that it's, like I said, my views are evolving. This is why I think now, I'm not saying I won't change my mind. In fact, I wrote an article for 1 Peter 5 a few years ago about, can a pope be deposed? And I actually, even right now, you can download that on my website, a PDF of that. And I don't necessarily agree with what I said there. I wrote that a couple years ago, and I said a pope could never be deposed. And I don't necessarily think that's true anymore. I think it is possible. I haven't thought that completely out yet, but I just tend to think that maybe I was wrong on that. So I'm not claiming to be infallible here. I'm not the pope, and neither are you. So let's unless Pope Francis, you're watching this, then if you are, repent, convert, and please believe the gospel. But for everybody else, so my take on this is that first, like I said, it's very hard to believe. It stretches reason and credulity to think that that Pope Francis doesn't hold heretical views. Even if his language gets imprecise at times and muddled, there's just too much smoke for there not to be a fire. There's just too many things he says over and over again that makes one believe that he does not believe all the teachings of the Catholic Church. And that's sad, but I think that's a reality. Maybe there's a way you can pope explain your way out of this. I just don't see how it's possible. I also think that it's possible that a later pope or council will end up declaring Francis's papacy null and void. I don't think that's impossible. This has happened before in church history. It could happen again. So 50 years from now, 100 years from now, somebody could say, basically, Francis, by virtue of whatever reason, we're going to declare that papacy null and void. A quick aside here. I'm not going to go down this path. I personally have never been at all persuaded by the arguments that Pope Benedict XVI didn't validly resign. I know there's people who believe that very strongly, and they have lots of. I've read a lot of defenses. It's not like I've ignored those. To me, though, they all fall flat. They all fall as basically just legalistic nitpicking on whether or not he technically resigned or not. It's clear it's very clear his intent was to resign, and he considers himself not the Pope anymore. And to me, that's enough. And again, I'm not going to go down that path, but I've never found those arguments compelling that Pope Benedict didn't actually resign. I think he did. So that being said, so even though I think that maybe a future council or Pope could declare his papacy null and void, I'm not ready to say that a heretic can't be a Pope. I just don't think that's the case. I think it's an unsettled question. I think what's happened is that we've boxed the church in a lot of ways over the centuries. We've boxed ourselves into a corner of making the Pope detached from the church in a certain way. The Pope is the visible head. Christ is the invisible head, but the Pope is the visible head of the body, but the head is still part of the body. And I think what we've done is that we focus so much on the powers and the rights and of the Pope that we've given too little consideration to what happens if he goes astray. Yes, like I said, there've been theoretical debates, but we've really just boxed it all into everything. The whole church, in a sense, resides with this one person. And I don't think that's Catholicism. Obviously, the Pope is important. I accept the papacy. Just for those who are interested in my thoughts on the papacy, I did have my podcast a few months ago on rethinking the papacy in which I do challenge some of our common notions of the papacy, common modern notions, I would say, of the papacy. But I think it's not the case that we should say that. I think our view of the papacy has gotten so one-sided that we've created this monster, to be honest, of what the heck do we do now that we have a pope who is saying things that are contrary to church teaching, because we've built up this structure. And the structure that we've built up is a human structure, not the divine structure of what really is the papacy, what really is the ecclesiology of the Catholic Church, the divine institution of the Catholic Church. We've added a human structure to it of a lot of things trapping surrounding the papacy that causes these issues. Ultimately, though, I think here's the most important point for me when it comes to judging the papacy, judging Pope Francis and considering this, is I simply cannot make the call. I am a layman with a webcam sitting in my office in my basement. I have no authority whatsoever to say whether or not Francis is not the Pope. I think that the fact remains that 99.9%, if not more, of all the bishops and cardinals of the church, of the Catholic Church, and unless you reject them all as legitimate, which I know some study of the contents probably reject them all, the validity of all of them, unless you reject them all, you simply have to accept that they accept Francis as Pope. And so for you, as a Catholic, and for me as a Catholic, I think that's enough that you have to stay in communion with Francis. You have to stay in union with him. It remember, being in communion with somebody does not mean you're judging the orthodoxy of every person. I'm in communion with people at the local local parish here, Novus Ordo parish, suburban parish, where a lot of people I know have heretical beliefs. It doesn't mean I think I agree with them or I have to accept what they believe. That's not what communion means. I think only the church has the authority to declare, make declarations of excommunication and whether or not somebody's actually in office. There's plenty of bishops today who are heretics. I think we all know that. But they're still in their positions as bishops. And we don't all of a sudden just say they're not bishops anymore. We all decide, okay, this guy's, Strickland's a bishop, Schneider's a bishop, but all the rest of them, you're not bishops. That's not how it works. That's Protestantism, frankly. The way it works is we have to accept that these bishops who are legitimate successors to the apostles are doing a terrible job. Many of them are heretics, but we have to accept this and pray and fast and resist them when they're wrong. I'm not claiming some passive thing. We just sit back and let it all the heresies and errors be free to go around. We resist them. That's what we do here. That's what we try to do. But the fact is that we have to, I think as Catholics, we have to continue to be in union with Pope Francis. And I think if a person declares definitively, I understand if you're doubtful, I get it. I'm not saying you shouldn't be or anything like that. I get it. But if you're saying definitively that you do not believe Francis is the Pope, and so you're going to go to a church, for example, that does not name Francis in the canon, in the prayers of the Mass, I think at that point you have severed yourself in schism from the Catholic Church. And I think that's a very serious thing, and that one shouldn't do that. You've put your own authority over the authority of the church. Because if we can't believe, at least on some level, all the bishops and cardinals, then what's the point? What's the point of the hierarchy if that's not the case? Like I said, a future pope might declare that this pope, that Francis, his papacy is null and void. That's not going to harm us, though, to just accept the fact that he's the Pope now, not go along with any errors, not go along with any heresies, resist them when they occur. But it doesn't harm our soul any if a later official organ of the church, a pope or a council or something like that, declares that Francis's papacy is null and void. By the way, this is all why I've long been what I call myself a papal minimalist. This spans before Francis. When I first was introduced to Eastern Catholic views of the papacy and how they looked at it very different, I was always very attracted to it. But I will admit that Francis has hardened my views on it. I admit that freely. That I do think that, for example, we haven't gotten into really teaching on infallibility because we're not talking about infallible teachings here. But I do think that the infallibility is very rare when the Pope actually uses that. And also, I think the need for the Pope in daily life is very rare for a Catholic. I made a tweet a week or two ago where I said, we must diminish the papacy in order to save it. And I get that people see that and they're like, wait, what are you talking about? You're like leaving the church, something like that. No, that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is we need to diminish the modern understanding of the papacy in order to save the actual teaching on the papacy in the church. We need to realize that a lot of the modern ways we look at the papacy are not of divine institution. And that for me as a Catholic, if I'm praying my rosary, if I'm going to mass each week, and hopefully more, if I'm going to confession regularly, if I am doing my spiritual reading the scriptures, and if I'm living a faithful Catholic life, trying to follow the moral teachings of the church, what of that needs Pope Francis or whoever the Pope might be? None of that needs the Pope to do all that. Yes, the Pope is essential for the big things in the church, but they're not essential for my daily life. And so I really think that a lot of this comes up because of the fact that we see and hear every single thing the Pope does, and we make it apply to us directly. I am sure there have been times in papal history where the Pope has said, maybe in an audience, something heretical, but nobody knew about it because, except for maybe the 30 people who were there, just simply because we didn't have mass modern communications. Modern communications has made this more of an issue than it ever has been in the past. So is Pope Francis a heretic? I think it's likely. He's definitely said things such that their plain meaning is clearly heretical. Maybe you could Pope slain it away, but I'm just saying their plain meaning, what an average person reading it would interpret it to mean. And unless he later gives a explanation, we have to go with the plain meaning. They're clearly heretical, but we can't do anything about it. We can't assume he's not the Pope. We have to let the proper authorities decide. We don't follow him when he says things that are errant. So, for example, when he talks about the communion of saints, including apostates, we don't follow him in that. We resist him. We say that's not true. And we tell others around us that that's not true. But ultimately, what we do is we continue to live our Catholic life. We just assume that the person that every single cardinal and bishop in the world says the Pope is the Pope. And if later it's decided something different, that's no skin off our backs. And we just accept what we see today, the reality today. So I think I'm going to wrap it up with that. I think I got through that pretty well. So I usually ask people to like and subscribe at the end. At the beginning, I'm going to ask at the end here, because if you're still listening, if you're still watching, then obviously you like the content on some level. So I would just ask you to subscribe to the channel wherever you watch it, wherever you listen to it. Like this video, let other people know about it. I'd really appreciate that. And until next time, everybody, God love you.